Well, riots and looting have largely died down into day six, with some incidents of arson still being reported, as the South African government is starting to assert that the third force narrative is behind the protests. But we must be mindful that this is always a convenient excuse for a government to use to cover up a lack of growth and job creating policy since 2007. Now, The Art of War, written in China in the 5th century BC and ascribed to Sun Tzu, says that when soldiers find themselves in a position from which there is no escape, they would prefer death to flight. Now, the prospect of a collective collapse in the social status and the financial ruination and imprisonment for a number of people in the kleptocratic faction of the ANC is not death in the physical sense, but it is a fate that will generate enough shared dread to unite people and drive them into a real fight. And the ANC, rather than society in general, will determine for the time being who our next president is going to be. And this will not be guided generally by democratic process in the branches. We know votes are habitually bought. And as the party secretary general, who's suspended, Ace Magashula, can exercise a considerable power over the regulation of branches, it's always been a concern. Moreover, the extent to which kleptocracy has become a standard mode of rule across the provinces and from the cabinet down to ward councillors, it means that a large number of people in the party have a direct interest in sustaining the rot. And these factors have led some to conclude that there is a real prospect that Magashula, perhaps with Julius Malema as his deputy, could take the presidency. And a quick look across the Limpopo River illuminates in grim detail what that future would look like. Vast riches for a small political elite, won at the cost of violent authoritarianism, mass poverty, institutional collapse, and massive immigration. But this is all speculation. So what is behind the scenes that have been lead stories around the world and showing the beloved country with all her warts to a global audience? Let's welcome our panel as we continue to try and pick our way through the detritus of the last few days. Rolf Meyer, chief government negotiator during the democratic transition in South Africa, former Minister of Constitutional Development and currently a director of the In Transformation Initiative. Matthew Parks, Deputy Parliamentary Coordinator from COSATU. Peter Attard-Montalto, Head of Capital Markets Research at Intellidex. And Gavin Kelly, Head of the Road Freight Association. Rolf, there are a number of worrying developments. There's been this very dramatic rise in the use of arson. And as a general pattern, it seems once a property has been looted, it's then set alight. So the destruction is deep and damaging, as well as the damage to confidence and the country's image. However, we need to understand that there are different forces at play here. What do you see as the main drivers of the past week's violence?
It obviously started with the imprisonment of Jacob Zuma. There's no doubt about that, that was the factor that sparked the unrest. But what followed, I think, in the 24 hours after that was not necessarily planned and or coordinated. All the sources that I've tried to find some answers from indicate that this was something that probably was not necessarily planned over the last few days. It got out of hand. There were certainly elements behind it. And I think there's a lot of speculation, as we've seen also in the media this morning, a lot of speculation as to who were actually behind the start of this unrest and whatever the intentions were. But I think, you know, it's too early days to really make a satisfactory conclusion about what's behind it, except to say that there's definitely an element of insurrection. I don't think we can deny that possibility. And of course, then on the other hand, it was criminal acts, looting, that got out of hand, and I think that was not necessarily all planned.
I think Peter Tarbman-Tolson, to bring you in, what leads many to speculate that this is more a planned insurrection is the targeted nature of these particular protests, targeting key supply chains, cell phone towers, water treatment plants, ports, forcing refineries to shut down. This really does seem to have all the hallmarks of something that is being orchestrated rather than just some spontaneous uprising.
Well, I think we need to be very careful. There are a large number of different groupings at play here. And as Rolf was saying, I think there were certainly, you know, initial sparks into a larger socioeconomic powder keg that led to the scale that we saw on Monday of looting and opportunistic looting from general members of the public. But I think the balance that we're now trying to find, talking to a lot of people in security structures, etc., is how much orchestration is actually going on. Now, there certainly is some. That's particularly in KZN, much less in Haoteng. But that is going on, and I think, you know, we have to put that in a box, though. You know, we can't just dismiss the wider socio-economic issues which have led to the looting, but equally we need very rapid, you know, security and police action against people who are both fanning the flames and who are orchestrating underneath the surface as well. I think, you know, there's also a grey area in the middle. I mean, there are a lot of criminal gangs, mafia, etc., in KZN, who've been seen in the construction sector, etc., over the last year or so, who are at play here, who straddle a grey area in between. So it's a very complex mix, and I think that's the troubling thing going forward. This is not necessarily solved by any particularly short-term interventions.
The costs are massive. Gavin, I want to bring you in on this point. We had Tiger Brands announce in a SENS update today, 150 million rand so far that it estimates has been looted in the snacks division. That's not taking into account the damage to bakeries and other properties in KZN in particular. What sort of damage has been done to your members' businesses and assets, Gavin?
Well, obviously, the figure is still being tallied as we see exactly what's happened. The first couple of days when the riots happened on the national routes, and you would have seen those pictures from the Mooi River Toll Plaza, that was a reasonably easy calculation because we knew the number of vehicles that had been burnt out, and, you know, as the figures climbed from 5 to 10 to 15 to we sort of around 40 now, and of course we haven't worked out what's happened at the DCTs yet, the distribution centers in and around KZN and obviously in Gauteng. So those initial figures were still scary, but they weren't as huge as they will be now. So there were, you know, vehicles burnt on those routes, and depending on what the vehicle was and what it was carrying and what specialized equipment it had, we kind of took an average figure of about 5 million rand per vehicle. So you times that by 40 and you quickly get to 200 million rand. Isn't a lot in terms of what we've seen over the last week. But now we're looking at billions of rands. We're looking at what's happened to distribution centers, how they've been ransacked, equipment taken out of that, of course, vehicles there have been burnt, and then they've come back and just burnt the empty buildings. And that's a big problem because that stalls the whole process of getting logistics back into queue and getting it running, because where you were going to and where you were coming from have been destroyed. So really, we're looking at billions of rands in terms of just assets. And then, of course, there are some companies who've been wiped out. They're gone. And of course, all of the employees are now going to be jobless. There's going to be no salaries being paid there. So we are already in the billions of rands.
And that is, you know, when we look at the fact that Sasria, at least one state-owned company that we hardly ever talk about, can cover many larger businesses who've taken out Sasria as part of their cover. I think many of the smaller businesses might not have Sasria protection, and you worry about them as well. But I want to come back to the impact on the workers, Matthew, and these laborers who are not going to be able to return to jobs as a result of this. What do you make of the events of the last 7 days?
No, the devastation is huge. We're getting reports from our unions in the clothing industry, the transport sector, the agricultural sector, the retail sector. I think we'll easily lose 100,000 jobs. Entire shopping malls have been destroyed, and that hits workers across the place. My company owner might get insurance payouts, maybe in 6 months, maybe in a year. But what happens to those workers in the meantime? They'll sit at home with nothing. You might also find that not all the company owners will come back and rebuild the company. They might just decide to pack it up, call it a day, and take the insurance payouts. So the toll is going to be heavy. We're now getting reports of shortages of basic goods, of food, of toiletries, etc., because the shops have been destroyed, because the trucks are blocked from distributing their goods. But I think from our side, what's the cause? I think Rolf is right. The imprisonment of the former president is there, but also because of a culture of impunity that has been built over the past decade, where some political elites have made themselves above the law. They've hollowed out the state, they've hollowed out the police and the intelligence capacity to deal with criminal elements. And of course, you know, we've always been warning as COSATU that we're sitting on a ticking time bomb, Mike. When you have unemployment rates of 40% plus, a sense of hopelessness, of absolute poverty in many towns. Some of these towns in KZN are textile industry towns which have been devastated over the years. So yes, there was a political orchestration because looters don't go and burn power stations or shopping malls. Who carries that kind of a petrol with you? They will steal the TVs, etc., and the food, sure. But there's also an element of desperation. I think that's why it's spiraled quite quickly out of control. So it's quite a wake-up call for all of us, Mike.
Yeah, that powder keg, to mention it again, has been sitting there simmering in the background of South African society for a very long time. And if you start looking for silver linings in all of this, one does hope that scales have fallen from certain eyes and we start thinking about the very nature of South African society, which has generated such exclusion. Now, one could debate that and say, well, we were starting with the right economic policies up to 2007 to see some dents. We're seeing 5% growth. And then we had the Polokwane movement, where we really shifted away from those economic policies. Rolf, what do you see, firstly, before we get into that, as one of the key failings to have been laid bare by all of this? The failing by the intelligence community to be able to get ahead of this and the hollowing out of SAPS has got to be a real concern. It represents a very weak state.
It represents a weak state, but I think we have to look at where it started. And you pointed that out just now, and that was, you know, probably 2005. I think there were reports or analysis since the weekend that indicated, you know, what lay bare at the moment is the fact that there are divisions in the ANC, that in the ruling party, that grew over time. And it started probably there in 2005 when Jacob Zuma was fired as deputy president at the time. And it developed over a period of time, and nobody really in the beginning paid much attention to it or took it too serious. But I think we're now seeing the price for that. And it looks to me, if there is an attempt in the first instance to battle it out in the heart of the ANC as the ruling party. The sad thing is, this is the consequence that the country is now suffering. So the country is the victim, and for that reason, we have to make sure that this is being stopped, not stopped only for the moment, but stopped in terms of future consequences. But I think it's right what was said by one of the colleagues that it shows how hollow our security forces are, or our security system is. This should have been picked up earlier on. I'm absolutely certain of that. And there should have been immediate reaction of a much stronger nature by the weekend already. We took too long to deploy. It should have been nipped in the bud on the first day, so to speak.
And only to have 20,000 boots on the ground now certainly seems to be far too late. Peter, I want to bring you in. We are talking on the back end of a BUSA conference, press conference that's being held as well. I believe calls being made there for a 24-hour curfew. What do you make of that?
So I think that's quite problematic here. It's basically too late. I mean, this should have been put in place on Monday, basically. And I think, you know, having a curfew now is basically only going to impede people looking for food, people who have to now travel from KZN to Mpumalanga, say, to find food, these kinds of things, to help stop the cleanup, etc. So I don't really see what the purpose is of it here, but it reinforces the need that there should have been much, much swifter action early on. And people, you know, sort of say, oh, but, you know, didn't know which way this would go, and blah, blah, blah. That I think that's the problem with this excuse, with riots. This was the lesson from the London riots. You have to not be cautious. You have to stamp on this stuff very quickly because it metastasizes so quickly and can scale into something larger so quickly. Now, the government had these plans. It did have plans behind the scenes on how you deal with large-scale rioting on socioeconomic for socioeconomic reasons. This was always brought up in various security scenario plannings and analysis, and the government wasn't ready to deploy that, and I think that's quite deeply problematic. But it comes back to that, to pick up on what Rolf was saying, you know, Michael, we had a conversation the other week about the construction sector and what was going on there, the Richards Bay Mineral situation. You know, there were already deep concerns from investors about the inability not only of SAPS to deal with something like that, but the inability of the government to take investor concerns seriously about what was going on around construction sector mafia as well. And I think this reinforces the deep problem here. As businesses consider, what do you do about rebuilding in KZN? Do you rebuild somewhere else, in Gauteng, in Western Cape, etc.? And, you know, the actions, I think, in particular, of the KZN premier here are deeply concerning and are being watched very closely by investors. You know, this guy basically has a blank check because he's notionally a Ramaphosa ally, but is saying some very, very deeply problematic things about the former president. And I think, you know, these kind of issues are really going to come to the fore as people consider what you do about political risk, what you do about investment risk in case of them going forwards.
And I want to circle back to that, Gavin, before we do, just in terms of logistics and how we get supply chains back up and running as quickly as possible. There are already talks of food shortages in parts of KZN because bakeries are shut down. What do you make of, firstly, the call for a 24-hour curfew, but secondly, how long do you think it's going to take to get supply chains, key supply chains, back up and running?
Yeah, I think a call for a 24-hour curfew is probably not the right way to go. It's going to stymie a lot of the activity, and you've heard what Matthew was saying earlier on. So no, I don't think that's a good idea. I think what we need to do is have directive policing, directive security activities. We need to secure corridors. We need to secure the areas, the logistics areas and the hubs, and we keep people away from that. And then obviously, if there's going to be activity and you can see it to be questionable activity, then it gets dealt with. I don't think a 24-hour curfew is a good idea. How long is it going to take to get back to normality? How long is a piece of string? I think everybody right now is trying to ascertain exactly what the extent of the damage is. So we have members and operators going in to see what their warehouses look like, if they're still standing. And it's going to be a case of having to clean those out, get those back into operation. Some of those warehouses were warehouses for perishable goods, which is where the real challenge is going to lie. It's going to be getting back basic foodstuffs, getting milk back. I'm sure some of your viewers would have seen milk being dumped, terrible pictures, because it had nowhere to go, nowhere to be processed. So that's really going to be the immediate challenge in front of us, is trying to work out what sort of infrastructure damage has happened and how long is it going to take. A couple of weeks to get some of those things, some of those warehouses and DCTs back online. Obviously, we want to get back in to delivering goods as soon as we can, and the retail chains are going to have to ascertain what sort of damage there is. Perhaps we can put some temporary stuff up to get the basics out. But I think it's going to take a couple of weeks to get all of that in plan. And we don't have operators really keen to start transporting into KZN from the other logistics hubs until we have definite certainty that the South African Police Services and the National Defence Force being deployed can guarantee our safety in. That is going to be really where the core lies, is guaranteed safety protection of the logistics movement.
And to Peter Matard's earlier point about scenario planning, surely government has done some scenario planning to ensure that our key corridors are secured, and one hopes that that can get rolled out as quickly as possible. Matthew, from Labour's perspective, what role do you see organised labour playing now in the rebuilding exercise? We are seeing pictures of community groupings and organisations taking it upon themselves not only to defend their communities, because that thin blue line just wasn't there, but to now go and clean up. And it really is heartening and encouraging to pick at some silver linings from this very dark cloud. What role is Labour playing?
I mean, I think two parts, Mike. I think one is that these workers, the nurses, the doctors, the paramedics, who've been providing life and death support, those are workers. They continue to perform that service. Many of them have actually been threatened for trying to do the work. Our police unit, Public, has been mobilizing police officers to embrace the call to go to KZN, etc. Our units have spent a fair amount of time in the past few days trying to cool the flames in KZN, so to speak, across the towns, across the province, etc. Because they do have a footprint in most places. Right now, a lot of our manufacturing unions, like SAC2, Zakao, in the retail sector, are also trying to work with employers to do an audit of what's the damage, what needs to be done to rebuild it. But we met at NEDLAC last night as COSATU and proposed basically a 12-point intervention plan, where we think we need to look at, after the police and the defense force reestablish the rule of law, how do we pick up the pieces for these destroyed companies, destroyed communities, destroyed jobs. And obviously some relief needs to come from government, some needs to come from the insurance sector, some from the banks. But also as Labour, we want to say that, look, from our side, we proposed that the Unemployment Insurance Fund must pump in some relief to these workers and these destroyed companies, because insurance might cover the company, but it won't cover those workers' lost salaries. And there is sufficient funds in the UF to do that. We already met with the UF on Tuesday to say, can they start costing? What are the options? But whatever it is, it can't take long. We need to have a plan within days. So we are meeting again tomorrow at NEDLAC. I suspect Michael must meet over the weekend so we can really put together as Labour, as government, as business, a package of relief, a disaster package to cover all the different gaps. And what can all of us contribute as social partners to rebuilding going forward?
Rulf, as we conclude, we've got about 4 minutes to go. How do we rebuild from here? Well, the frustration for me is so many local asset managers and international asset managers I was speaking to before this, we're starting to relook their capital allocation strategies to South Africa. The reforms in energy, in privatizing SAA, in our institutional strength and the constitutional court holding firm were all very good indicators. Now, this certainly dented our investment image. How do we rebuild?
Undoubtedly. You know, our image in the international community is really, really affected. I won't say how deep and wide it is because it's impossible to measure it yet. But I think the one encouraging thing, Michael, that we've seen in the last few days is the way in which South Africans started to react from average people from the street, literally, to organized business, to organized labor and others, civil society in general. I think the reports that we've seen in that regard shows that South Africans are not prepared to take this lying down. And I think that is the positive message that we have for ourselves, but we can also demonstrate it to the rest of the world. There is a resilience in the makeup of the South African society that I think will ensure that we overcome this. It's a big shock. And I think it's a big shame for all of us that it happened. And we have to look deeply at what the reasons were really. We have to address problems like inequality, unemployment, and poverty out of this. But the point is, I think South Africans are willing to do this. It's amazing how people are starting to work together in rebuilding and coming back and ensuring that it doesn't go further.
Absolutely. And Peter, just to build on that, clearly we have to reignite the conversation that we have so often about the economic policies that have to be in place to create growth, which in turn creates jobs. And that's why reform is so important. But the immediate response surely now must also turn to what Treasury's role is in terms of opening up the taps a little bit.
Oh, exactly. And this is where I find myself unusually in full agreement with Comrade Parks there, that we need a fiscal stimulus to come through. And interestingly, we have the money. We have this term to trade boon, very, very large amount of cash, $412 billion currently in the coffers. There is an ability maybe to spend $30 billion or so through extension of the COVID grant, through some of these UIF interventions that Matthew was mentioning. So, yes, we are actually in a fortunate position with this money to be able to bridge. But really, there's no substitute for those longer term reforms. And this is the challenge. Before this, we were already forecasting that unemployment continues to creep higher over the long term, not reverse and move lower, even with the reforms that have been put in place. And that's really the deeply concerning thing. If you have this continually upward sloping unemployment trajectory, you're going to have a repeat of the current situation. I think that's really the spark that should create some positive panic in government. To actually get a move on.
Sadly, though, to my earlier point, the capital allocators who are about to invest, which then leads to that virtuous cycle of growth and jobs, are probably going to be delaying that decision. So I think we will need a government stimulus to be the flywheel to catalyze that growth and at the same time quell this insurrection as well. Sadly, that's all the time we have for. We're going to keep the coverage going on the unfolding riots, which have certainly died down to some extent on day six. Around the panel, we had Rulf Meyer, Chief Government Negotiator during the democratic transition in South Africa, as well as former Minister of Constitutional Development and currently working as a director in the In-Transformation Initiative around electoral reform. Matthew Parks, the Deputy Parliamentary Coordinator for COSATU. Peter Attard-Montalto, Head of Capital Markets Research at Intellidex, and Gavin Kelly, Head of the Road Freight Association. We'll continue this coverage of the riots and the aftermath all day on Business Day.